Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Alaska Senate Republicans have rejected Governor Mike Dunleavy's choice to fill a vacant Senate seat. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that the senators blocked confirmation of Anchorage Republican Representative Laddie Shaw to a seat left vacant last month by the sudden death of Senator Chris Birch. Shaw says he doesn't feel he was judged on his merits.
My reaction is that they were looking for basically a clone of Senator Birch, and I don't know if they appreciated honesty and independence.
The Senate Republicans did not announce the vote breakdown, but Shaw says he believes the 12 senators evenly split in the vote, which followed an interview.
It was like an inquisition, and they came from every direction, and we figured we were going into this with a 6-6 vote, and we came out of it with a 6-6 vote.
Shaw supports payout of a full $3,000 permanent fund dividend this year, the amount calculated using a formula in a 1982 state law. Opponents say the full payout would require the state to violate another law that limits the amount that can be drawn from permanent fund earnings. Senate President Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican, says the vote on Shaw is not a reflection of his qualifications, which she describes as exceptional, but that the voters who elected Birch had shown support for changing the dividend formula.
The duty of the Senate is to confirm a replacement to Senate District M with deference to the views of the late Senator Birch and, most importantly, deference to those of all the people in the district that he served.
The legislature passed and Governor Dunleavy signed a budget which includes a $1,600 dividend this fall. Governor Dunleavy posted a video about his response to the vote on Shaw's appointment, describing him as well qualified and taking issue with his rejection by Senate Republicans.
They're pushing a political litmus test based entirely upon the PFD. Senate District M is more than just a single issue district. District M deserves qualified representation based upon a wide variety of issues, not just one.
Dunleavy has 10 days to appoint another choice to the open Senate seat. Some Fairbanks students are joining others around the world today participating in climate action events. The climate strikes or walkouts are aimed at forcing action to halt climate change ahead of a United Nations Emergency Climate Summit September 27th. One of the local organizers, Fairbanks West Valley High School student Nanesh Peter, says she got involved because climate change has a direct impact on Alaska Native people.
This work is really important to me because of the relationship my people have had with the land for such a long time, and also for the future generations and myself.
Another student involved in this afternoon's climate strike, Sophia Benson, points to a UN report that says humans have 17 months to take action to prevent serious future impacts of climate change. Benson says that's inspired development of a list of 17 action items, including some that are Alaska-specific.
About protecting the Arctic National Refuge, as well as stopping the pebble mine.
The student climate strike is scheduled to run from 1:45 to 3 this afternoon at West Valley High School's football field. Environmental Protection Agency scientists say reduced wintertime fine particulate pollution in the Fairbanks North Star Borough has resulted in a decline in the death rate. The statistic was reported by the agency at a public meeting in North Pole Wednesday, during which federal, state, and local panelists shared air quality information and answered questions. KUAC's Robin reports.
The panel reviewed some of the 10-year-long journey of government oversight of Fairbanks and North Pole's pollution problem, then mentioned new regulations, new science, and new health data. Krishna Visnawathan from the Environmental Protection Agency mentioned a yet unreleased study using Venn mapping that showed fewer people dying from air pollution.
From 2015 to 2018, initial look at what we found is that there's a reduction in the mortality rates in this area with data from this community.
He says the data are preliminary, but there's a solid correlation between air pollution and dying. He said the low death numbers are because of several factors: citizens burning only dry wood, or choosing not to burn wood, or because the winters have been milder with fewer inversions to trap air in the Tanana Valley. Alice Edwards from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation gave a status report on the Serious State Implementation Plan, or SIP. That's the long list of instructions and recommendations compiled by DEC. Among the draft regs are better wood stove tech, more burn ban days, and changing from number 2 diesel fuel to the much cleaner burning, but more expensive, number 1 heating fuel.
Purely from a statutory perspective, we have requirements that we need to meet as a state or we face consequences. Those consequences are not just sanctions. It's also consequences to the community and the quality of life here.
The SIP is still a draft, and the department just posted on its website all the comments it received this summer on the proposed regulations. That DEC website is also where you can see graphs of local air quality monitors. Edwards says voluntary programs are working.
This is a real collective effort. We need everybody's help to get there.
The graph from the air quality monitor for downtown Fairbanks shows little change over the last 18 years, with the PM2.5 concentration hovering up to 50 and last year down to 35. That's below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard maximum for that particulate. The graph for North Pole, however, is pretty impressive and shows a constant downward line since it was installed on Hearst Road in 2012. It measured 158 that year and has dropped to last year's 52, but still way above the national standard for PM2.5. After the panel discussion, many folks still had questions about things like the regulations in the SIP, natural gas accessibility, and electrostatic precipitators, those smoke-scrubbing chimney appliances called ESPs. Nick Czarnecki, the borough's air quality manager, says citizens are working more closely with agencies to report data from their private air monitors and get advice about personal action to reduce pollution.
There's a lot of collaborative work that's going on. Issues like the ESP, that takes borough, state, and EPA involvement. And they've got the nonprofit Smoke Busters with Mike here.
That Mike would be Mike Prox, who is active in spreading the gospel of ESPs, a strategy he likes much better than state regulations on the estimated 14,000 wood stoves in the borough.
If we are concerned about cleaning up the air, we need to help our neighbor rather than criticize or force our neighbor.
That was echoed by North Pole resident Hank Bartos, who says voluntary programs like the wood stove changeout program will work.
I just changed out an outdoor wood boiler, and I went through the borough program and changed it out for a gas-fired boiler. I'm a senior citizen. I'm in the most vulnerable group, living in the most vulnerable area, and I want to see it, you know, the air cleaned up.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
A University of Alaska Fairbanks linguist to help document and preserve indigenous languages will be remembered at a memorial gathering this weekend. Dr. Michael Krause, who spent 40 years at UAF and directed the Alaska Native Language Center, died last month at the age of 84. Krause, one of the world's foremost scholars of Alaska Native languages, worked with tribes to start and fund the Language Center, where his work focused on preservation of the language of the Eyak people of the Copper River Delta region.
Passion is almost underdescribes the depth of his love for the language and the people.
Longtime colleague Gary Holton says there were only 6 Eyak speakers in the early 1960s when Krause began working to document the language, which he describes as distantly related but distinct from other Athabaskan or Dene languages.
So he undertook to document the language structure, the language sounds, and the language vocabularies, and a collection of folk tales, narratives, stories.
Holton says much of the field work was completed by the 1970s, but that Krause continued to work with Eyak people over following decades, including through culture camps.
The Eyak culture camp was happening in August when Michael passed away. So my colleagues and I there were given strict instructions to make sure that we complete this work and get the materials that he had compiled, published, and available.
Holton emphasizes that Krause answered a call from the Native community to help them preserve their languages, and that his interest extended to all minority languages, which he raised awareness of in the broader linguistic world. Holton, who now works in Hawaii, is traveling to Fairbanks to emcee the public memorial gathering for Dr. Krause, which is happening Sunday afternoon at the UAF Davis Concert Hall from 4 to 6. I'm Dan Bross.